Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast. An exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast. We are on episode number
105.
Thank you so much for joining us. We are on chapter 13, text number 6.
Dash 7.
Nice. My name is Shama Sangeeta.
My name is Priya Darshini.
And my name is Shamali. And we are the Modern Yogi Podcast.
Nice. And we're also on YouTube.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's been a lot of people not harassing, but lovingly asking in our DMs, not harassing. I don't know why I said harassing, but there've been a lot of people who've been asking about a YouTube channel, and we finally got our act together and we have episodes on.
Mm. Where can they find that?
They can find us on youtube.com.
Right?
I don't know what the link is.
Just on our bio on Instagram.
If you follow
Modern Yogi Podcast on Instagram, the link in our bio, click on that and you see all the platforms you can find us on.
Very
go to
nice.
YouTube from there.
Look at you, so modernly techie, savvy words.
I love it. And if you want to click on that same link and you're really happy and excited mm-hmm. about our YouTube channels and you just want to donate to our podcast, our GoFundMe link is also on our link in bio.
Beautiful.
On Instagram.
Indeed.
All right. A quick recap of the last episode.
Krishna talked about the body and the soul.
Oh, wonderful.
That's perfect. And in the most concise, beautiful way, because it's true, right? We've talked about this topic. Like, Arjuna's asking about it again. Krishna's reiterating it. And we talked about the body and the soul and the knower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the biggest change we're about to encounter is what constitutes our body and what changes it goes through and just different aspects of its constitution. We're just kind of going deeper into its composition, you could
what
say.
What it's made out of.
Yeah.
It's like that belly, do you know Billie Eilish?
Yeah.
What? How does it go?
What is it? What is it singing?
What am I made of?
What was I made for?
Yeah. I couldn't figure out the lyrics.
What was I made of? Yeah. Essentially, that's what it is. Yeah.
And last thing in the recap, you get a chance to hear our wonderful producer, Abhijit, give a whole in-depth explanation on, you might have heard the words Vedanta, Sutra, the Vedas. If it all feels kind of like a jumbled, confusing mess, we explained that in the last episode. He explained it so well, it just made Priya ooze with pride and be like, that's my husband.
That's my husband.
It was cute. It was really
cute.
That's
my hubby.
That's my hubby. So check it
out.
That's right. That was an awesome breakdown there.
All right. Shall
we? All right. The invocation, please let us.
Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Translation: I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto them.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Chapter 13, text number 6-7, Priyadarshini.
Perfect. Okay, I think Krishna is still speaking, and it goes like this. The five great elements, false ego, intelligence, the unmanifested, the 10 senses, and the mind, the five senses, sense objects, desire, hatred, happiness, distress, the aggregate, the life symptoms, and convictions, all these are considered, in summary, to be the field of activities and its interactions.
Well, okay, one more time.
Actually, I don't even, I feel like even if we say it one more time, it is not, it's so, there's so much to it.
Wait, so a giant list, right?
It's a giant list of what our bodies are made of, basically.
So interesting.
Okay, so I'm going to break it down. I'm going to try my best to break it down.
Okay.
So there's the first, the basic parts are, first, there are the components of the world, and those are earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Okay.
Those are the five elements.
That's what makes up of, that's the world is made up of those.
That's the canvas,
yes.
Right?
Well,
kind of.
So technically here, when we're talking about all of these things, we're talking about the field of activity. So we're talking about the body and this material world in which we can enact the senses and basically... It's like...
Do stuff.
Yeah. Do stuff. Right. I know it's a weird way to explain it, but do stuff as a embodied soul. Okay?
Right.
So The first thing is there's five great elements, right? We talked about these: false ego, intelligence. And then it says the word unmanifested. But what it means is the unmanifested stage of the three modes of nature.
That exist within us.
Yeah. So that's goodness, passion, and ignorance, right? Mm. So goodness, passion, and ignorance when they're not enacted. So we're not talking about actively, think about them just floating as elements in the world, right?
Interesting.
They're not actually being used. They're just particles of what made up our body and the world. Mm. Is that making sense so far?
Yeah. Question. Is that the unmanifested amount of each mode that we have within us or just the basic building blocks?
This is the basic building blocks.
Okay.
These are all parts of the building blocks and it separates them into like different parts. So like in this case, so these are the five great elements: false ego, again, intelligence, and then the unmanifested stage of the three modes of nature. So the unmanifested stage of passion, ignorance, and
goodness.
Nice.
We totally forgot. Good.
It's a lot. Yeah. You know? Okay. It's a lot of information. So then, okay. Then we have the five senses and we know those, right? Those are our eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and skin.
Mm.
That makes sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And then in terms of when they're kind of enacted into working, they would be voice. I don't know why, but it says the five working senses are voice, legs, hands, anus, and genitals. So why is it the case? It's like the verb version of the senses. So we speak voice, we move our legs and hands, we poop.
Right.
And we procreate.
Right.
Right? So these are actionable senses.
True.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
I love that you said we poop.
Sorry, I should have said it better.
I don't know what else do we do with the anus? We poop.
that's like you come up with in that moment. Okay. Now, above the senses, we have the mind. And that's always known, right? So like the mind is sort of the controller. We've talked about the chariot. We've talked about this before. Does that make sense so far?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay,
perfect.
Cool. Do you want to add anything else in terms of what I just, those?
So just if anybody zoned out in the past 4 minutes, okay? So Priya is listing all of the things that are in the field of activities.
Yes.
All the things that are around us in this material.
That make up us and the things around in the material world.
Okay,
so
it.
Both.
So everything that you're listing is what we're made up of and also the environment around us.
Yes. And it gets even more convoluted, but yes, that's the gist.
Okay, cool.
So
cool.
Field of activity in this context is not just our body. It's the field also around that our body enacts. It's things.
In a sense, because we're talking about components of this world, right? We're still talking about earth, water, fire, air, and ether, which are within our body, but also within other elements. So it's like a matter of, again, just think about it as components and then it will add up to something.
Right. Yeah? Okay. So inside and outside of us.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Here is the giant list. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I'm on board.
Okay, cool. So if we include the mind, there are 11 senses altogether.
Mm.
Okay. Now, there's five objects of the senses. And it's like, wait, but we just talked about the senses in verb and we just talked about the senses as in like ears, nose, mouth, whatever. But now there's five objects of senses and that's smell, taste, form, touch, and sound. So it's like not the verb, it's just inanimate. Inanimate, is that the right way of saying it? Elements that affect the senses. So smell, taste, form, touch, sound, right? Like, so it's like the physical form of the senses, if that makes sense.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if we add all of these up, there's 24 elements and all of these 24 elements combined are called the field of activity.
Okay. So all these 24 elements that could possibly exist within the body.
They do exist.
So we're talking though within the body. Field of activity.
Everyone has all of these.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Everything that you just said.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
24. Cool.
Now, there's also, interestingly enough, there's interactions that can happen within this field of activity. And those interactions are desire, hatred, happiness, and distress.
Mm.
And everyone also experiences all of these.
Wow. Desire, hatred, happiness, and distress.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. So far, so cool.
I'm on board.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Now, There's also, because there's just more and more, there's the living symptoms represented by consciousness and convictions, which I thought was so fascinating. If we break that sentence down, right? Living symptoms represented by consciousness and conviction. So what things make us living in a sense? Obviously, there's all these, like the soul, blah, 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 blah. But consciousness, right, is how any given person might say that someone is living. Does that make sense?
Right.
Because they're conscious.
Yeah, because they're conscious. And then conviction is another sign of that.
Of consciousness.
Yeah. Of being...
being alive.
Being alive, basically.
Mm.
And these are manifestations of the subtle body, which is mind, ego, and intelligence. So consciousness and conviction are manifestations. It's like how the mind, the ego, and the intelligence show up in the world.
Right.
So through your intelligence, you have conviction. Or you have, and through your mind, you have consciousness. Through your ego, you have convictions, right? Like these, all of these three kind of form consciousness and conviction.
Because when you're conscious, you have this conviction that like, I'd like to be alive today.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And, but when you're dead, you don't have that conviction anymore because you can't have that conviction.
Yeah. Right. That's okay, an interesting, this whole section could apply to like, let's say someone who's just like, we're a sack of bones and nothing more. We don't have anything beyond this world. Well, the sack of bones wouldn't create convictions, and that consciousness leads us to something. We're something more.
Yeah. And the fascinating part of this is that if you look at all of these elements that we just discussed, human beings are not the only ones that have them.
Right.
Right. This is just talking about any embodied soul has these elements in them. Isn't that kind of fascinating?
Like even like a tiger has consciousness and also conviction.
And intelligence and ego. I am the one in charge here.
Right. Yeah. Or, I'm going to kill this prey. Or
that's my kid. Or like there's or that gives me food, right? There's like intelligence. There's like all of these aspects are there. Just desire, hatred, happiness, distress, ears, nose, tongue. Like if you list any of these, they're actually in within any of us. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then the last part. Okay, wait. So it's just so much information. So one, this is Prabhupada now just being like, here's the facts. Okay. One who desires to know the 24 elements in detail should study the philosophy in more detail, because what we're hearing now in the Bhagavad Gita is a summary only. So this is like, imagine if this is so fascinating and intricate. If you're more curious, you can go study in more detail because there's so much more to know about all of these elements and understanding them even further.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. Can I take a step back for one second?
Yes, 100%.
So you like, you know, sometimes, did you guys play Legos when you were a kid?
Yeah, totally.
Right? And so sometimes when the Legos were super complicated, right? Like you had to build a Taj Mahal, right? And it was like so many pieces and it was huge. And it was one of those big, really big Lego
sets,
right? So essentially Krishna is like showcasing that, like, pretend our face was on one of those giant Lego sets, right? And these are and we had to build a person, right? Or anything that's conscious. Literally all of the different building blocks. Krishna is outlining all of the different building blocks that are inside the blocks, but also are inside the packaging and around the packaging. And like literally everything that is conscious in this world has these things. And these are the blocks, the building blocks that it's made up of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many pieces do you think that is?
Well, it's 24.
Okay, then, cool. Well, I thought it was gonna be like 25,000, but
oh no!
But
I mean,
it's kind of like the primary colors that could have.
I feel like an idiot. Where it's like, that must be so many pieces. And Priya's like, nope, just 24.
No, sorry, I didn't mean it like that.
But it makes sense though. Yeah,
I mean, I could see where it comes from because it has endless combinations. Yes. Those pieces, like the primary colors that you can endlessly combine to make a variety of infinite shades of colors.
Ah, so there's so many.
Variations.
So the variation comes not in what of these pieces are used, but amounts of each of these things. For example, how much desire versus how much hatred, happiness, distress. Like each of these things are quantitatively
different.
Yes, thank you.
And also qualitative, because one might have more of one quality than the other.
And a tiger might have different things than a human.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Okay, now this is the final point that is made here in text 6-7, okay? It says, the body is the representation of all these factors. And there's one more thing that happens to the body, and it's that there are changes that happen to the body. Because you remember, Krishna was talking about what happens to the body, what happens to the soul. That was a question that was proposed earlier on. And so he says, there are six things that happen. The body is born, it grows, it stays, it produces byproducts, it begins to decay, and then it vanishes. And those are the changes we go through in our life.
And Krishna says it's six.
Like, there's six.
There's six changes.
Therefore, the field is a non-permanent material thing. So
non-permanent, right? It's constantly changing.
Our body is not eternal, and it is material, right? It's made up of matter. And that's what, and that's the gist of six and seven.
But whoa, I have a question on that thing. Okay, so the body goes through six changes, right? We're born, we grow, we stick around for a little bit, we produce byproducts. I'm assuming that's
having children.
Yeah, but like, what if you don't like tiny byproducts? Like, then do you only go through five changes?
I wonder if there's other types of byproducts, and that's why it wasn't said offsprings particularly.
Are byproducts also like poop?
It could be.
I mean, that's true. People who don't produce children can produce poop.
Yeah, because I think if it was just children, it would say like progeny or, you know, something.
Yeah, Prabhupada could have said.
He could have said a different word, but I don't think it was necessarily saying that you only have to have children. I think it was just like we create byproducts as human beings.
Anything that comes out of the
wax.
Body. Yeah.
Sure.
Boogers.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're fulfilling the sixth role, even if you don't want to have kids.
That's so right.
Everyone does these six things.
Yep.
Then.
Yeah.
Then we begin to decay and then we vanish. Wow. This is fascinating. Literally.
Yeah.
Like Krishna's giving us the Lego set of like existence and like what goes into us and everything around us.
Yeah. Do you recall when we were just sitting before we started this recording, we were highlighting all together and we just kind of, you know, and I was going, whoa.
Yeah.
I was reading all of this. I'm so glad you covered these verses. This is you did a great job explaining
that. Very good summary. Very good summary. Why do you think Krishna put this in towards the last six chapters of the Gita? I was thinking about that because this could have gone in the way beginning when we were breaking down things.
Well, if we're talking about the let go thing that you've talked about a million times, we then
three, but yeah.
I'm so sorry. I said that with a lot of love. It was
so
like,
much love.
It was very automatic. It was with love.
It's okay.
The mentioning of the, you know, what was the first one?
Live.
See,
live.
It doesn't even say, I need to say a million and one. How to live, how to love, how to let go.
There you go. let go part, right? I think it's like understanding what we are,
right?
What we're made of, what processes happen in our body naturally, whether we want them to or not, is a good way to detach and understand and be able to let go.
Right. No, totally. I was thinking that, Shama, when you said the Lego box set, I was thinking, you know, IKEA sends you like a million pieces to assemble one thing. So Krishna's like, here are all the pieces, look at it in its broken, most broken down state. And this is what we're working with. So it's all kind of laid out on the table, just the tangible or also intangible, like intelligence things that the building blocks. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. So,
okay. So this is great. I love this.
Yeah, it was like very to the point. Like it was very clear, very clean. So if we go back, should I read text 6-7 one more time?
Please. So these are all the things that we're made up of?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So the five great elements, false ego, intelligence, the unmanifested, the 10 senses, and the mind, the five sense objects, desire, hatred, happiness, distress, the aggregate, the life symptoms and convictions, all these are considered, in summary, to be the field of activities and its interactions.
This was what I'm made of. That was Billie Eilish. I don't know. That was terrible.
That was pretty good. In part, this could be the painting and the canvas because, like, okay, the canvas was the material nature. So we're touching a little upon what's around us in the field of activity, but the field of activity is the body. So it could kind of be like the painting, the body, and a little bit the canvas, the material nature.
It just blew my mind with all the details.
Wow. Yeah.
It really covered everything.
It really did. That's amazing, right? Vedic literature is like, there's five of this and 10 of this and 7 of this. And then if you add it up, you can get 24 of this. Like, what other philosophy is so boom, boom, precise?
Scientific.
Yeah.
Almost, you know, like precise scientific. It's like, there's nothing, it clears all doubts.
Totally. Prabhupada said, Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
He says, if we make an analytical study of these 24 subjects, then we can really understand the field of activity. And as I was hearing you break it down, Priya, it absolutely sounded like an analytical study, how they interact, what are the building blocks?
Yep. Yeah.
Very good summary.
Thank you. Wow. Of course. That's great.
Teamwork here. Yeah. All right. Should we do text 8-12?
Yeah. That's great. Prabhupada put 4 texts in this. So 8/12.
You're going to have a lot of tackling to do, Shama, with reading this one.
Okay. So this is a very long verse. So strap in. If you're driving, just like take a deep breath. It's a very long verse, and it's a long laundry list of things. Yeah.
It's like a run-on sentence at its best.
I think it's the longest text we've ever seen.
Yeah.
You get to read that.
Yeah. And Krishna's talking about all of these things that I'm going to say is like, these are to be in knowledge, right? So these are the qualities of knowledge. So just keep that in mind when you are listening. So Krishna says, humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife and home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and the philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge. And besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Prabhupada just made like a line down the middle. He's like, all of this, knowledge, anything else, ignorance.
He went,
literally.
Prabhupada said, ignorance.
Oh man, that's going to be an awful sound so to hear.
No, I love it. Ignorance.
Okay.
Now I just like, dude, piss me off. Wow, that's like a long laundry list of things that we should be striving for.
Okay. So all right. Are you guys ready for this?
Let's go.
So Prabhupada starts talking about this, and it's just kind of breaking down what Krishna means in this text, right? So it starts by saying the embodied soul is strapped by the body. Mm. Does that, like, embodied soul, right? It's like encased. Our soul is in our heart. Our body is covering it. So that's that meaning of that, which is a casing made up of 24 elements, which we just learned.
Yes.
And the process of knowledge, as described here, is, let me read that all again. The embodied soul is trapped by the body, which is a casing made of 24 elements. And the process of knowledge, as described here, is the means to get out of it.
Right.
Ooh. So we don't want to be an entrapped soul. Right. We want to be free with Krishna. We don't want to be in a body anymore. And the process of doing so is this particular text described here by Krishna.
So like cultivating these activities gets us out of ignorance.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It goes on to say, of all the descriptions of the process of knowledge, the most important point is unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. So if one does not approach or is not able to approach service of the Lord, the other 19 items are of no particular value.
Wow. Ooh.
So I guess there are 20 things that you described here when we just read the text.
It sounds like I described like 100 things. Yeah, but let's go with 20. Yeah.
So it's saying that 19 don't matter if we don't have unalloyed devotional service to the Lord.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It says, but if one takes to devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, the other 19 items automatically develop within them.
Loophole alert. Okay. So if we just do a little bit, then we get the rest of them.
Well, the little bit is really loving Krishna.
Oh,
it's
right.
No small task.
Right.
But if we do it sincerely, all of these qualities of humility, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity. So sometimes we might think like, oh, if I just humble, then I'll be a good devotee of Krishna. Mm. Or if I'm just, you know, nonviolent or tolerant or this or that. But actually, Krishna's saying, if you become my devotee and you're sincere in your devotion, then all these qualities will naturally come.
Right. It's so interesting, because if we're focused on loving Krishna, like you say, it's no small task, then I think the way we see life, we see as everything coming into our life in a way that's going to make us grow. And then that's why with that perspective, everything else to cultivate, humility, pridelessness, the whole list, then Krishna's going to put us through situations which kind of test us. But if we're trying to just develop something higher, we'll see also everything with that spiritual vision as, no, this is not why did this happen to me, but this is something to help me grow and it'll help it fall into place.
For sure. And so then Prabhupada goes on to say that, okay, so we just understood, right? Unalloyed devotional service to the Lord is the way to go. But how do we do that? And it says, transcendental life begins when one accepts a bona fide spiritual master. So if you're curious, where do we start, right? Well, I mean, you're reading the Bhagavad Gita, you're listening to the Modern Yogi podcast, you're probably having your own spiritual practices at home,
right.
But it really starts when we commit, right? We commit to saying, this is my path. I have faith in Krishna. Mm-hmm. I believe in this process. And that's the first step. And so then Prabhupada goes on to just start breaking down each of the qualities that Krishna described in the text.
Right.
So the first one is humility. And it says, humility means one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others.
Mm. Ooh, that's a good one.
Say that slowly again.
Yeah. Humility means one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others.
Ooh, I love that.
That's we shouldn't crave that validation.
Yeah, like we're like, oh my God, I wonder if they're going to notice what I've done. Yes. Oh my God, I wonder if I'm going to get recognized. Oh, like that kind of anxious energy. Like that's not, you know?
Totally.
Wow.
And then it goes on to say, the material conception of life, meaning the material world, as we know, makes us very eager to receive honors from others. But from the point of view of a man in perfect knowledge, honor or dishonor pertaining to this body is useless.
I say one quick example about that? Because I was thinking, right, if we have a spiritual perspective, anything that comes in our path is to get us a little humble versus if we don't have a spiritual perspective. And I'm sure ages ago I shared this, but one book marathon of, you know, distributing these sacred texts, my dad was paired with this one, his partner in the book distribution. His partner didn't do much and kind of stayed on the couch. He was very new. I think he ended up shortly after leaving. And my dad was like breaking his back the whole marathon trying to distribute the books. And when it came time to announce the scores in the temple, they were like making it very public and they would call the names. And they said, and my dad knew exactly how many books he sold. And somehow his partner wrote down that as like what my dad did was his own. And they read the thing. So-and-so did this many books. And my dad, Radhavinod, then he switched kind of Radhavinod, nothing. They switched roles. And my dad like realized what happened, that his like partner totally took credit for what he had done. And in that moment, my dad said something inside him, just within, inspired him to like, just stay quiet. It's okay. You don't need to go up and be like, that's what I did actually. He swapped and he did nothing and stayed on the couch. Blah, blah, blah. Like he could have taken it totally different. I don't know what I would have done in that situation because it's a little upsetting. Like, dude, that was my work. But yeah, my dad said, it's okay. It cultivated humility. So in a way, having a spiritual perspective, things are going to bother us. And okay, this is a lesson. Krishna sending my way, you know? So I don't know.
For sure. So I thought that was really interesting also because humility usually, like we think of like, oh, I just don't want to maybe be seen or recognized. But here is specifically talking about the anxiety of looking for that honor, right?
Wow. The anxiousness of it.
It's so interesting.
Wow. Yeah.
Now the next one Prabhupada describes is nonviolence. And it goes like this. It says, nonviolence is generally taken to mean not killing or destroying the body. But actually, nonviolence means not to put others into distress.
So interesting.
One should try his best. Oh, and then Prabhupada kind of equates that we're all in distress because we're in this material world. And
Fair.
So attached to the nonviolence, Prabhupada says, one should try his best to distribute real knowledge to the people so that they may leave this material entanglement. That is nonviolence.
That's a high standard Prabhupada setting for nonviolence. Like you said, not only just killing the body, but don't put anyone in distress. You know, one tidbit, there's this psychologist that gives a whole class on how words, literally one sentence or one word, can have such an effect on someone's entire nervous system that you don't realize what a superpower you have at the tip of your tongue, how to inflate, you can inflate or deflate someone just like that. So
It's wow. true.
So fascinating. All right. Yeah. Prabhupada continues. And so maybe I'll just like go blah, 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 blah. And then if you have any examples, feel free. But one of the examples is tolerance, right? One should be practiced to bear insult and dishonor from others. Tolerance is hard. Right. It's like when someone cuts you off in traffic, it's like, do you honk? Do you give them the finger? Like, what do you do? Are you tolerant? Yeah. Right.
That's so fascinating.
Yeah. Prabhupada gives this example of like even Prahlad Maharaj, right? He was trying to be killed by his father, but Prahlad Maharaj tolerated him. Right.
Wow. Practice to bear insult and dishonor from others. Mm.
That's a wow. lot of, yeah.
That's heavy.
And that is a practice though. To be tolerant is a practice because you are going to be poked and prodded from work, from colleagues, from family members. You are going to be poked.
Yeah.
And it's like, how tolerant can you be
when
someone insults you or someone does something that, you know?
I think, I mean, obviously it's a really hard thing to accomplish, but one thing that I feel like we've talked about before is, maybe we haven't, it's just kind of understanding like, my thought just went away. You know, when that happens, you're like,
total brain fart.
Okay. Brain fart. Sorry. That's totally okay. But I think we understand. We've talked about tolerance before.
Oh, wait. Yeah. Oh, there we go. Basically, not taking it personally because oftentimes people are suffering and when they're suffering, they kind of treat others not so kindly, but it's more about them than it is probably about you.
Hurt people hurt other people.
Exactly. So that's what I was thinking about tolerance. Obviously, there's times in which we should introspect and, you know, figure out if we're the problem, but.
Right. Yeah. One quick thing, while this might seem very hard, this is also creates such a freedom where I don't have to be the one, like almost like, I don't know what, fending for myself. If you did this to me, you did that to me. You can kind of like, take a back seat. Krishna will take care of it. Mm-hmm. It's hard if you can get past the, like the initial whatever, but hands up, Krishna's got it.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Literally for the next one, which is simplicity. Mm. Prabhupada says one line only. Okay.
He's simple.
So simple. Simplicity means that without diplomacy, one should be so straightforward that he can disclose the real truth, even to an enemy.
What does that mean?
Wow. It's like without having any ulterior motives, be so direct that you can be like a proponent of the knowledge, whatever it is. Mm. Being super, like without any sort of
transparent,
like, super transparent, no ulterior motives, like being as direct as possible.
And I think even when the truth is hard to say, I was watching a little TV show, Suits. I know we've talked about it before.
Great show. Yes.
Anyway, Harvey Specter at one point was like, and what are we doing? He was talking to a really close friend. What are we doing if we can't even tell each other these hard truths? Mm-hmm. And sometimes being there for others, telling them hard truths, like calling things as you see them, even when it's uncomfortable, we're helping each other on our spiritual paths. We're saying things as they are, talking about spirituality. Yeah.
So you guys said simplicity is being transparent. And you said one other word I wanted to write down. What was that word?
Ooh. Without ulterior motives.
Without ulterior motives. Yes. That was great. I love that.
The next one is accepting a spiritual master. Mm. And Prabhupada said that is essential because without the instruction of a bona fide spiritual master, one cannot progress in the spiritual science. Mm.
Yep. One thing someone new might think, oh my gosh, I won't be able to make any spiritual progress without a spiritual master. But it's okay until you find your eternal spiritual master. Also, you have Srila Prabhupada to look to as your spiritual master.
He's also like our original spiritual master.
Yeah.
Yeah. So definitely you can take shelter upon him and try to learn as much as you can until you find that spark within somebody else.
Right, right. Yeah.
The next one is cleanliness. Mm-hmm. There's two kinds, external, internal, right? External, taking a bath, right? I think that's very important as a Vaishnava to be doing that first thing in the morning, right?
Yes.
The second thing is very, very, very important, right? Internal cleanliness. And Prabhupada literally says, this is what we need to do. We need to chant,
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
And this is the most important line. This process of chanting this Hare Krishna mantra cleans the accumulated dust of past karma from the mind.
Mm,
beautiful. Say that last line again.
This process of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra cleans the accumulated dust of past karma from the mind.
Mm. I love that because it almost means like, you know, if the karma of like a previous life of holding grudges or this or that, when you chant Hare Krishna, that just goes away from our mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oof, that's cool.
That's really, really good.
Beautiful. Very, very cool. All right, next one. Steadiness means that one should be very determined to make progress in spiritual life. Mm-hmm. Without such determination, one cannot make tangible progress. And mm-hmm. here's the kicker. The self-controlled means that one should not accept anything which is detrimental to the path of spiritual progress, right? Ooh. So if we're trying to achieve something, being like, whether it is like studying for your master's or like trying to get a job, and like, we can't be deterred. We have to be steadied on that path.
Yeah.
So self-control and steadiness, would they be one, or they're two separate ones?
It's kind of it's connected. It's kind of connected. Yeah. Self-control. Because those are both required for each other.
Right, right. Yeah. I agree. They're very connected.
Yep. All right. And then renunciation. Is that correct? Yeah. Renunciation of the objects of sense gratification. I think we talked about this a lot in the Gita. One should become accustomed to this and reject anything that is against the path of spiritual progress. That is real renunciation.
Mm. Yep. One should reject anything which is against the path of spiritual progress.
Yeah.
Wait, isn't that self-control?
So self-control and then renunciation of the objects of sense gratification. So he just is like in the laundry list, steadiness, self-control, and renunciation are three different things. But I think they all mean the same thing.
Hmm.
Being steady, being self-control. Like, or they help each other out. You can't have one without the other.
Yeah, I feel like, okay, when I read self-control, it says one should not accept anything, but then renunciation is reject anything. But it's like that feels the same in my brain.
Shama, could you give an example about both? Or what's the difference to you? How did you see? Or do you just see them as connected?
Go ahead.
I guess in terms of like the definition that Srila Prabhupada puts in the purport, it's hard for me to differentiate them. But if I think about it in real terms life, then I can think like renunciation is giving up things that are not good for us for our spiritual progress. And then self-control means living our lives without necessarily giving anything up, but knowing which things don't help. It's very similar.
Right.
But
it's very similar.
Right. It is.
Self-control, one should not accept anything that's detrimental. And then the other one is letting go.
Accepting versus letting go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting.
Nice. Interesting, cool. Right? The next one is absence of false ego. Let me know if I skipped anything, because there's a lot.
Absence of false ego. That's a big one, because don't they say, and if you look at spiritual life as the little bhakti lata creeper, the plant that grows at the very, very, very top, you have the false ego, which is the hardest thing to renounce, because everything else might fall into place. You're a pure devotee, but then with that comes all glories to you. You are a pure devotee. You're elevated. Bow down. Like then your false ego needs to really, that's hard. That's what roots us in this material world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada says like, we can't give up our ego, right? There are some philosophers who say we should give up our ego, but we cannot let go of our ego because our ego is our identity.
Right.
But we ought to give up the false identification with the body. So Prabhupada says anything where we have a sentence that says, I am, that's false ego. Like I am German. I am good at this. I am intellectually superior, like whatever is an I am, that is false ego because we are identifying with the body.
That's a differentiated with the ego versus false ego.
Yep.
So if it was ego, how would you say it?
Ego is like, I am a spirit soul. That's true.
But that's still I am. No, just kidding. I understand what you're saying.
Oh yeah, it's true. I can't even start a sentence without saying I am.
Because it came up
like,
so much.
We do have an identity. Identity equals ego.
Yeah. I mean, I guess when you're saying I am the spirit soul, like that just is a fact.
That's a fact.
You can't deny that.
But if you give an I am to the bodily conception, like anything that is attached to this body,
that's
the false ego.
Yeah, when it's connected to the soul, like if you're saying I am a servant, that's fine.
Right.
If you're saying I am
German. Or I am a good
cook.
Right. That's false ego.
I'm Krishna's cook. You're fine.
Yeah. Oh, if you identify with the spirit or soul or Krishna, that's cool.
Fascinating.
Yeah. I love it. I think that would be the difference with eternal versus temporary.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Anything that you can, I don't know if I can say I'm Krishna's cook, because I don't know if I'm eternally Krishna's cook.
Oh, but true say.
But it might, I do think the eternal versus temporary is a good frame of thought.
Right. I'm eternally, you know what? Maybe that would be too specific. I'm eternally a servant of Krishna.
Right.
And whatever other specifics fall under there? Sure, sure.
Yeah, I like that. I think that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah. We have time to squeeze in? Because it's another, the laundry list continues. I think maybe the last two texts in this to leave them for the beginning of next time.
Yeah.
We might have to do that.
This is, remember, people listening, ladies and gentlemen, this is 8 through 12. That's the first time it's chunked so many.
Yeah.
And I think maybe let's sit with, you both read a lot of really good ones from the list. I really liked a lot of the ones you said. Did any of them stick out for you guys? Out of the list, you both, they did awesome back work, reviewing, highlighting.
The cleanliness is like, what is spiritual cleanliness? Is like chanting Krishna's names, because that removes the dust of karma from the mind.
Oh, yes. That one reached you.
Yeah, I love that one.
Yeah.
I really like steadiness. I think like I'm seeing it more and more based on everything I've been feeling lately. It's just like, it's the way to go. Like it's really the only way to make progress in spiritual life.
Totally. You know, steadiness also reminds me the other day when my dad was talking about, you know, who you choose to surround yourself in life, who you choose even for a life partner. He was saying, you have to ask yourself, what do you want in life? You want to do service to your spiritual master's mission, and you want to be peaceful. And the way I interpreted peaceful is also steady. You want someone in life who will bring you peace and steadiness. So from a life partner to the friends we choose to our environment around us, constructed in a way that will bring you that steadiness and that peace.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, I love it. And just before we go, I want, like, anyone who's listening, like, and we're doing this for ourselves, trust me, like on a regular basis, like how do we cultivate more of these things? So in this episode, we talked about certain things. I'll list them out, but like, I want you to really concentrate on these words and like, how can you instill more of this in your life, right?
In small ways. It doesn't have to be something that's going to burn you out by trying to do everything, but just like keeping that in our minds, right?
Right. Yeah.
Humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation, and the absence of false ego. That is what
non-violence.
We covered. And nonviolence. And that is what we covered in this episode.
Beautiful.
Please reflect on these words and how you can instill them more into your life. And we will continue with the rest of this four verse text in our next episode.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello, beautiful souls. If you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
The Modern Yogi.